Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today, and great to have back Melinda Myers on the phone with us. She's a nationally known gardening expert, a TV and radio host, author, columnist, over 30 years of horticulture experience. And I know for a fact she's written over 20 gardening books. And I also know she has lots of advice and information on her website. Take a look at it. It's melindamyers.com. So we'll talk with her today about getting your garden ready for the season. We can share some gardening tips and take your gardening questions as well. And I hope you'll join the conversation. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Melinda Myers, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Always fun to join you and chat with your listeners as well.
Yeah, it's always a good time. I know most of our Wisconsin gardeners are getting ready for the season. Some have been out there already. What are the most important things to think about at this time of the year?
You know, I think after last year, a lot of us that shopped at our normal time realized that you had to start early because we fortunately have so many new gardeners, which is great. And I know the garden centers have been, plants are moving off the shelves. So if you bought early, hopefully you hardened off those plants. And if you're shopping this weekend and the coming week, and, you know, Memorial Day is such a traditional planting day, make sure you harden off those plants you've started in the basement, or if you buy them from a greenhouse, transition them into the garden. Gradually introduce them to more sunlight every day. Let the soil go just slightly drier and start fertilizing till you get them in the garden. And if you haven't prepped your garden soil, I know a lot of people are way ahead of me. I don't know about you, Larry, but I'm trying to catch up right now.
Yes.
But soil prep is so important. If you do no-till, that's great. I do a lot of lasagna gardening where I just create my soil, kind of basically composting, creating raised beds. I add organic matter. I have lots of sand, so it drains fast. And if you have heavy clay, compost is that amazing substance that improves drainage, improves water-holding ability in fast-draining soils. And research, I think it was out of Cornell, found that plants growing in amended, compost-amended soil do much better, more drought-tolerant, more resistant to insects and disease. And the other thing it does is it helps hold our stormwater, so it helps capture rainwater where it falls, so it doesn't run off our lawns into the storm sewer, and then we have flooding and all those problems. And Fresh Coast Guardian's website, freshcoastguardians.com, has great information on this and other things that we can do as gardeners to help keep water where it falls. I know it's not the glamorous part of gardening. You know, nobody drags their friends to the backyard and go, ooh, look at my soil. Well, there might be a few of us, but then our friends run screaming. But, you know, the plants are what always, I think, attract us when we're at the garden center and we're loading up our cart. And so one of the things that I think we ought to talk about a little bit is substitution, because you may go with a list of plants, and maybe you've already found this to be the case. You didn't find what was your first and second choice. Somebody beat you to them. And so last year I had didn't get all my first and second choices because I waited too long to do my shopping. And so I thought it was a great chance to try something new. Check the plant tag to make sure it'll grow in those conditions in your garden or backyard or landscape, and that it will fit when it reaches its mature size. You know, those little transplants grow pretty fast, and the last thing you want to do is crowd them out and waste your money.
Well, now you got to tell me about those substitutes and how they turned out for you, or at least some of them.
You know, I have to tell you, a good friend of mine who had a few, he's in the business, had a few left over, so he had Arizona Sun Gallardia, and I think a few of them survived over the winter. He gave me a couple lobelia. I think those are coming back. So I'm at the benefit of being a procrastinator, Larry, is things that reseed or are borderline hardy, if you wait long enough, you may just find that they do okay. My tomato crops were pretty good, but I tried pineapple tomato on recommendation of somebody who attended a webinar before COVID, and it was okay. It was an interesting flavor, kind of a uniquely shaped tomato. I'm glad I can say I did it once, and I'm done. And but, you know, she loves them, and so it's always fun to try things. I think tomatoes are one of the most personal vegetables that we select. You know, what I think is a great tomato, you may not agree, or someone else says, no, this one's better. And so I tried a lot of the All America selections last year, and yellow apple was my favorite. And the PR was it would produce 1,000 small yellow apple-shaped tomatoes on one plant. I think it was more like 2,000. I was giving them away. I had them saved in the basement, and I was still eating them, I think, through November. And the seeds were hard to find, but I finally secured some. So my plants are a little tiny, but I know they'll catch up. So that was one that I'd hoped to grow. I was lucky enough to score, and so they did okay. And, you know, just trying some new and different things, and some that I've added to my list, and some that, like the pineapple tomato, I probably won't be doing again.
Well, now, you know, we've talked about mulch before, but what's your go-to mulch?
You know, I mulch, and just for people that may not have heard us chat about it before, it suppresses weeds, it conserves moisture, so it means less work for you. Water less often, you're not going to have to pull as many weeds, better for your plants as it decomposes. And I'm a big believer if you can use whatever's available on your property. So when I lived in the city, I don't know where all the leaves came from, but I always had a constant supply of leaves. And so I use those as mulch. And now I have some, but not, you know, I leave them in the woods. So I'll have some that blow in, and I'll use those. I also like evergreen needles. You know, if we were down south, they sell us pine straw, right? And, you know, and people go, well, nothing grows under my spruce or pine. Well, that's because the trees are blocking the sunlight, and those needles are a great mulch. And so I use that in my orchard, my orchard of five apple trees. But and it really gave me good control. And the other thing that I do, and I know there's some controversy about using newspaper and cardboard, but if I need more of a permanent mulch, like around some trees, I'll edge that garden bed. I'll cut the grass and weeds really short. I'll lay down some cardboard and then cover it with wood chips. And, you know, making sure it's a good source, free of jumping worms, because anytime we talk mulch anymore, we really need to talk jumping worms, right? And I did this around three spruce trees on my property, and they're really in a place they don't get watered. They came with the landscape. Those plants doubled in size over the last 9 years, and it was just last year I started getting weeds coming through that area. And, and before I was trying to pull the weeds out from underneath the trees, and it was just, you know, and it was one of those places that I'll get to it tomorrow, and then it's next week, and then it's a nightmare. And it really... I find using newspaper under organic mulches in areas you're planting or cardboard for those more permanent areas really has been great. I know some people feel it interferes with the biology of the soil, but this is as a gardener experience, not research. This is Melinda the gardener going, they worked for me. So, you know.
There we go. Well, you mentioned pines, and Robert in Arborvita has a question relating to pines. So let's go there. Robert, hi.
Good morning, Melinda and Larry. Thanks for having me on the show. I've got a lawn that I'm having some problems with. I'm in northern Wisconsin. I have real sandy soil, and I have probably 50 mature, 100-foot tall, red and white pines on my property. And I've been able to grow grass in some places, but what I'm really good at growing is moss, and I'm trying to avoid that. And I'm wondering what suggestions you might have.
You know, people pay for that. I'm trying to just help you reframe. And I have a friend we call him the moss man, because he comes to my woods and collects moss, because that's what he, you know, spends time and money doing. But if you don't want moss is usually a problem with poorly drained soil, not the problem for you with sandy soil. Heavy shade, probably part of the reason, and acidic soil, which in northern Wisconsin, our soils tend to be more acidic. So if you really can't stand the moss, you may want to try some of our sedges, like Pennsylvania sedge, some of the native sedges, and I would just pop a few in amongst the moss just to see how they do, because at least the moss is protecting the soil and preventing some of those weeds that would, you know, do fine, unfortunately. And the other thing you might want to try is Canadian ginger. I've had some really good success with Canadian ginger in heavy shade and drier soils. Now, the challenge will be is getting it established. Anything you try to establish under a tree takes a couple of years because the canopy of the plant blocks not only the sunlight but the moisture. And so those plants, it rains heavy, but the rain doesn't get to them. And then add that sandy soil onto the mix, and that can also increase it. So you might want to try that. I'd just try a few plants and see how they do before you try to take over the whole area. I'm not sure the Nomo mix, which is a lot of fine fescues, and if you've tried grass, I'm guessing you've tried shade-tolerant grass.
Right.
So I'm guessing probably not success, probably not enough light and moisture for that. And again, that's one of those things where light and moisture are issues. But those would be two plants that you might want to give a try. And again, pop them in just a couple, see how they do before you do that whole planting area.
And you probably don't want to chop down your pine trees.
But no.
That
good
would
point,
be the
Larry.
Way to get
that wasn't
rid of
an
them.
Option I was going to explore, but good point.
Thanks, Robert. Appreciate the call. Jim and Stevens Point, we'll go to you now. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I have a question about using grass clippings as mulch. I don't collect grass clippings, so I use them from friends. And sometimes those friends use weed and feed. So my question is, can I use those grass clippings if I wait for a couple of weeks, or how might that work?
Great point. And I was going to mention grass clippings, so you've given me a chance to kind of bring this in as a great mulch. One, if you can, leaving them on your lawn is the best bet, especially if you're using weed and feeds, because you're putting that chemical right back where it belongs. If you collect and you're not sure what somebody's done, they did research at the University of Minnesota. Boy, it was in the 80s when yard waste was banned from landfills, and they were finding that after a few weeks that the chemical is out. I think on a conservative side, if you can wait 6 weeks after they've treated, so if they're doing a weed and feed mid-May, which is typical, but find out, waiting at least 6 weeks or six cuttings, you know, the grass is growing pretty fast now, so six cuttings may come faster, that usually by then it's not a problem. The safest thing is collecting from places you know. You should be okay from a jumping worm standpoint if they're free from jumping worms in that area, plus you're collecting the clippings as long as their equipment is clean and things. And the other thing with grass clippings is spread a thin layer. Once it's dry, you could spread another thin layer. But if you put like 4 inches down at a time, and hopefully you haven't noticed this, Jim, but it gets matted down, it prevents the water from going through, it gets moldy, and it doesn't work well for the plant. So, you know, typically if it's your yard, you collect, you spread it, then the next time you mow, it's a good time to spread again. So I would be very conservative. I've seen two, but I'd probably go with six mowings at least just to be sure. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is try to hurt your plants, because that weed killer will leach out of the grass clippings into the soil and can cause damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to keep your own grass clippings on your own lawn. Our lawn people say that if you do that through the course of the year, that's the equivalent of one fertilizing.
Exactly. And then the other thing to do from a water quality standpoint, we don't think about it, and occasionally I want to stop my car and say, sweep those clippings off the sidewalk, back on the lawn where they're going to do some good, as opposed to washing in our storm sewer. And so, yeah, Jim, you have obviously figured that out. You're leaving yours on the lawn, so you're taking care of your neighbors who aren't. So I don't know, maybe you should try to convince them to leave them, but then you lose your mulch too. But
Oh, man. Melinda Byers, our guest today. Always great to have her with us. She's got a great website, melindamyers.com. And we've got a great producer, Jill Nadeau, and we got a great engineer, Tyler Dinner. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Melinda Myers, our nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host, author, columnist. She does an awful lot, and it's always great to have her come by. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And Arlene in New Berlin wondered about when she could cut her daffodil foliage down. They are inner lawn, and she needs to cut the lawn.
You're not going to like my answer, Arlene. A friend of mine who used to own the daffodil mart said you should let them dry naturally, and if you've grown daffodils, you know, that could be August. And most research says if you couldn't wait at least 6 to 8 weeks after flowering for the foliage to, you know, before you remove it. And that's one of the downsides of putting it in the lawn. And maybe, if possible, depending on who you share your lawn with, if you could mow around those clumps of daffodils and then come in after that foliage has had 6 weeks to put some energy back in. Cutting it too prematurely, and you probably know this, Arlene, is you reduce the energy stored for next year's bloom. I've got daffodils. I've planted thousands, and I love them. And the downside is I'm looking at a lot of leaves until my perennials, and I put them in my perennial garden, so they'll cover it up, but I don't have to worry about those leaves kind of looking ratty throughout most of the summer. So the longer you can stand it, the better, at least 6, preferably 8 weeks, which I know, depending on when they flowered for you. Mine bloomed a long time this spring. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was just incredible with the benefit of their cooler temperatures.
Arlene, thank you. Ron in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I had a leak in my bathroom, plumbing leak, and the water leaked down into the basement and ruined a ceiling tile, which fell all apart, and it's rather porous material. I was just wondering, and this is thinking outside the box. I don't expect your guests to know whether it would be good to use as a mulch, a ceiling tile that broke all up. You know, it was one of these acoustic tiles that it was perforated.
You know, that's a great question, and you're right. I don't have a definite answer. I'd be a little concerned about chemicals that might be in there, whether they're something that might be toxic to the plants or, you know, end up in the soil and then touching, you know, I know older things, we worried about asbestos. I don't know how old these are. So it might be worth, and Larry, I don't know if you're going to have one of your home, you know, improvement folks on that may be able to give them an answer on that one.
Yeah, it might be. And you might, well, the other thing you might do is if you know where if you were the one who put the tile in or if you know the manufacturer of the tile, you can go online to the manufacturer's website if you know, and it probably don't. But if you did, you could go on the website and you could find out what chemicals were in, as part of that tile material.
That's a great suggestion, and that's a good idea. I occasionally have people looking for it. A woman called me about topsoil, wondering what was in it, and she's got a lot of allergies, and, you know, it was bagged product. I said, look for the number on the bag and give them a call because they can give you the details that, you know, may not appear on the bag or the material safety data sheet or more information. So good suggestion. Thanks, Larry, for jumping in there and helping me out.
Well, Ronna, good luck to you. Thanks for calling. Paul in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hey, thank you, Larry. I've got a question that may not have an answer from your guest. Probably 5 years ago, my wife and I would do all of our, you know, lawn and garden shopping Memorial Day weekend. But if I waited that long this year, I would be on what your guest had talked about, first alternative, fifth alternative, you know, I'd be down. So it seems like our local greenhouses are opening earlier and earlier and earlier. And this year I was planting stuff the end of April. And of course I made the mistake of planting the end of April because I was covering stuff over when it was freezing all the time. And my question basically is, do greenhouses and nurseries restock? Or because if you wait, you're not going to get anything. because I don't know if they restock, and I'm not sure if you have a question. At least what I'm seeing in my area is I don't think our nurseries and greenhouses restock after the initial supply. And if you don't get there early, you're not going to get anything. So I guess that's my question.
Yes, and I can help you with not the answer you probably want to hear, but you're right. So what happened last year is there was such a rush, a lot of new gardeners. I think there was a 20% increase, don't quote me on that, nationally in new gardeners. And I've been lucky enough to really have doing webinars and meeting over Zoom some new gardeners as well as experienced gardeners. And we're seeing a lot of these new folks coming back and more, and they're shopping early because a lot of us learned last year if you didn't shop early, like you did, Paul, you didn't find anything. And the other thing that happened is a lot of suppliers who were growing plant material for 2021 because the demand was so high sold it to garden centers retailers in 2020, making it an even bigger shortage in 2021. Now, some of the garden centers have increased their production, but I'm seeing the same thing you are, Paul, that a lot of empty benches, a lot of people, you know, running out of material and plants, and I think they're opening to help meet the demand. And then one of the concerns I had, took some time to talk hardening off, even if it was too late for some people, is hopefully next time to remember, is that you're right, Paul. You bought early, you put it in, and then you had to protect it. And so I do think we're going to see some shortages of some of the favorite plants. And I do think we're, you know, I know one of the garden centers I work with, Ebert's Greenhouse Village, they're planned for a summer influx of plants, more like trees, shrubs, and then some perennials. And then in fall, we'll probably see some mums again. But we're also seeing some shortages just because if the greenhouses order or the garden centers that don't grow their own, when they ordered, there was so much competition for the order. It was like, you ordered, if you can't increase, we have nothing left. And so it's a good and a bad thing. We have more people gardening, so that's great. More people tending the soil and getting the benefits. And the downside is those of us that are used to the traditional Memorial Day planting are kind of out of luck. So, you know, I think talk to your garden center, find out what their plans are. Everybody may be handling it different. Some that grow their own may be able to, may have a backup plan as well. So, but Paul, I think your observation is correct. I think we're just seeing, you know, I'm seeing empty benches. I'm hearing gardeners say, you know, I waited too long to buy this. And I ordered some stuff online, and I'm getting some pretty tiny plants for what I paid because I think that was destined for 2022, and they sent it to me this year. So it's in my hands to grow and nurture that plant. So good observation, Paul. I'm really glad you called because other people may be wondering the same thing.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. John in Eau Claire, let's go to you now. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm fortunate to live on waterfront. We have about 330 feet of frontage, which we left natural for the first 50 feet coming in. Other than a few grass walkways to bring us to our waterfront and a couple seating areas in the woods along the waterfront. I've had trouble getting grass growing in there because it's kind of shady. We have a lawn service that handles our, you know, everything for our lawn. And I called them to seed those areas for me, and they said, well, we can't because they'd put a pre-emergent down already, which would prevent grass seed from growing. So we can't do anything this year. Is there any way I could mitigate the effects of a pre-emergent having been applied and then actually see these areas so they're green? We're having a couple outdoor events on our back lawn in late July, and it'd be nice to have green lawn in those areas.
You might want to find out how long. There are different pre-emergents, but most of them they're generally saying you want to wait 12, I think it's about 12 weeks. But you might want to call and see what that wait period is. There's really no good way to get it through the soil, you know, and starting the only other thing you might want to do is if they say, well, you know, in 12 weeks it should be gone, which I don't know when they put that down, maybe late April. So that gives you May, June. Boy, you might want to try doing a quick perennial rye and just see if you have any luck. You know, it's going to take a week to 2 weeks for that to sprout and at least fill in. it may be one of those things you may have to mulch. I mean, if they put a pre-emergent in, yeah. And you bring up a good point, John. One of the things that it's always good, and I know it's not always easy to work with your lawn care if you're having someone do your lawn care. And a lot of times they have, here's our program, this is what we do. But you might want to have that conversation to so that they know what your plans are, and a good company is going to work with you. So I don't know of any options.
I can think of one option, and that might be sod.
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, if you really need it, sod might be your best solution.
At least in maybe those key areas, because if you did a pre-emergent to the whole lawn, and you're probably then you'd have to, you know, laying sod over the, it sounds like you have some existing grass, you're not going to get the results, but maybe in some of those key areas or, you know, the pathways, if that's where you're concerned. So it might be a matter of prioritizing, okay, this is where we're going to hang out, so we'll just redo this part with sod, but you're going to have to prep the soil for good success too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. But if it has to be done,
true, good
that's
point.
That's about the only thing I could think of, to be
that's
honest.
That's true. It won't. It's already up, so the pre-emergent won't hurt it.
There you go, John. Thank you so much for calling. Rod in Arlington. Let's go to you now. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Before this little shower came in, I was mowing lawn. And I have something growing in my yard that I have never seen before. I gave my wife a couple of the flowers. We think it's called a Bethlehem star.
Oh.
It's a small white flower, six petals with some yellow stems in the center, very low to the ground. It almost looks like little bunches of snow in the area that it's in. We've never had anything like that before. Just kind of wondering where it might have come from.
You know, ground squirrels, chipmunks, squirrels may have borrowed them from your neighbor's yard, and boy, they are prolific, as you've probably seen. Once they get in, they really grow and spread very quickly. And mowing won't hurt them because they're pretty low to the ground. And so I'm guessing some animal brought some of the bulbs over and buried them in your yard, and that got them started. And yes, they're very vigorous plants, very vigorous. Hopefully you can embrace them and like them, because that's the easiest option. And I had them in my yard in Milwaukee, and I'm not sure where mine came from either. Somebody in the neighborhood had them, a squirrel living in the trees, planted them, and they took off. So, you know, if you can enjoy them, and then as you mow, the grass will help keep them hopefully under control. Anything that kills them will kill your grass as well, because it is a monocot, like a grass, same kind of plant. So anything that kills them would kill your grass as well. And digging, you could try, but, you know, depending on how many you have, yes. Larry knows what the plant looks like. You'll be out there for months, but yes.
Oh, so there you go, Rod. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Well, let's see. Sharon in Berlin, let's go to you. Hi,
Sharon. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. You haven't talked about nettles yet. At least I didn't hear you. Cut down a sick 30-year-old pine tree in the front of my yard, and I'm going to turn it into a flower bed, I hope. But right now it's a nettle bed, and it's about good 2 feet high, a lot of them, some taller. It's good soil, naturally. It's going to, can I cut them down? Do I have to, can I spray them with Roundup or something like that? And, or do I have to dig up the roots?
So if you don't mind using a total vegetation killer like a Roundup or Finale, you could treat them, check the label. There is that wait period from when you apply before you can replant. So that's one way to get the tops and the roots. If you cut them back, they're going to resprout. So digging is the non-chemical way. I'm going to talk my crisis weeding this year. I don't know about you, Larry, but the weeds are incredible.
Yeah.
And there's new ones. And in some areas, I'm just cutting them and getting the flowers and seeds off before they have a chance to leave you know, their seedlings, create seedlings for next year's garden before I can get there and really manage them correctly. Because I'm choosing not to use total vegetation killers if at all possible. And so that means I'm trying to stay ahead and at least prevent the reseeding, then come back with some organics, but that's going to be repeat applications because it just burns off the top. So you do need to control them before you plant, either if you do a total vegetation killer or, and there are some beneficial insects that do like nettles. So I know there's some people out there probably cringing going, it's a great host plant. But I also know it can be pretty much of a prickly plant when you're trying to create a garden bed. So, you know, hand pulling or treating, solarizing is an option. And this probably isn't going to work for you, Sharon, because it sounds like you're ready to get started. But for others, if you edge the garden bed so you keep the weed out, cut the weed short, throw some clear plastic over. And Kansas State University found it was like 6 to 8 weeks of the hottest months. Well, that's our garden season in Wisconsin. Yeah. And you use clear plastic because it cooks it and it, you know, takes care of the weed seeds as well as the weeds. But, you know, that's for like, oh, next year I'm going to grow this garden, and you plan ahead. So, yeah, you're going to need to take care of those nettles and long sleeves, good gloves, so that you don't end up with the rash from those nettles.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Let's take another call. Jane in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi. My city has free compost, not mulch. Do I have to worry about jumping worms?
You know, what I would do is I would call them and ask how they're managing it. My guess is they're taking, like any municipality, taking material from any homeowner that drops it off. So it may or may not, those people may have jumping worms and may not even know it. Brad Herrick of UW Longnecker, the Arboretum, UW Arboretum, did a great webinar on jumping worms, and I heard it's on YouTube. So if you do a YouTube search on Brad Herrick jumping worms, it was a really excellent one. And there's been some research that if you could heat things to at least 104 degrees, it will kill the cocoons. Now, the problem is, on a big pile, is the whole pile getting that hot? And so some municipalities actively compost and get the heat up throughout the pile. So I would contact your Department of Public Works and ask, and if they go, what, jumping worms? You probably, that's your answer. You're probably not going to want to take that just because it's an issue. But I think municipalities are going to start addressing it because they're going to have to deal with this material somehow. And some municipalities have pretty active compost piles. I did some work with Greendale, was doing community gardens, and Greendale had one of the most incredible composting systems. And, you know, they did it almost in those white, long bags like farmers put hay, and they injected fertilizer. And they turned it, and they cooked it, and boy, at the end of the winter, it was amazing. And there was nothing left for anybody but residents that were first in line for that. And I think, so check with your municipality, and I think as home gardeners, if we ask those questions, we're going to help move them to helping us solve the problem. You know, they have to work on priority, so we can help them make that a priority. Because I'd be concerned about jumping worms that, unless it's a certified, you know, one of Brad's comments was, if you're buying mulch or you're buying any material, ask how they're managing jumping worms.
Yeah, and there you go.
Yeah, so let's hope they can say, yes, we're doing it, so you can have some good compost.
Thanks, Jane, for calling. Amy emailed, she has daffodil bulbs in a bed and leaves the greens until they die and dry, but she uses rubber bands to pull them up into standing clumps. It seems to work well to give room for some annuals. Wondering if that's okay. The daffodil foliage seems to stay green and keep charging for a good long time, and they are coming back well each year and multiplying. But is there a downside to prepping them like pigtails?
We had somebody send in a picture to Birds and Bloom magazine. I work with them, and they had braided theirs, put little googly eyes and hats on theirs. So you're limiting the amount of leaf area exposed to the sunlight, so you are limiting what's going back into the bulb. Amy, one of the things about gardening, right, is we can do it by the book and it works, and sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes we cheat and it works. So I always err on the side of I want everything going in your favor if I'm going to give you advice. So I would say leave as much of the leaves exposed. But I know people like you, Amy, that are doing exactly that. They're either braiding, they're bending, and put a little raffia tie or a rubber band, try to expose as much of the leaves as possible or leave them as long as possible before doing that. And, you know, the more leaf surface, the more energy, the better the bloom next year and the longer live the bulbs. But daffodils are pretty tough. So
yeah, they are.
Thanks for sharing that, Amy. I'm sure others are sitting there going, that's what I do too, and it works. So thanks.
Jennifer in Middleton, let's go to you now. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
So I couldn't help but jump in here, and I heard the guest speaker say she was having a hard time with some mail order plants. And I just wanted to offer that in the Madison area, we have a number of local farmers markets. One of them is the Monona Market on the east side. And I know for a fact that our family farm, as well as others, have so many garden plants to sell. And it's open on Sunday from 8:30 to 12:30. We are Pleasant Springs Orchard, and we are happy to provide your tomato, pepper, and flower plants this year.
Jennifer, thank you for that. And I just want to say I did mail order on those weird plants you can't find, the stuff that only strange gardeners like me grow, turmeric and ginger plants and some of those oddballs. Because I always, and thank you for mentioning farmers markets, because I spend a lot of my money at local garden centers and our farmers market as well. And you bring up a good point. A lot of the farmers markets, a lot of the farmers have those plants, and not as many newbies are thinking about shopping there. So, Jennifer, thank you. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And just know, I spend locally first. And just buy the weird stuff that I can't find locally. So thank you for pointing that out. I really appreciate that.
I do as well. Thank you, Jennifer. Well, Melinda Myers, our guest today. Great to have her with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Melinda Myers. Always great to have Melinda come by and talk with us. She knows so much, so much experience. And I hope you'll take advantage of her experience. You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. So please join in. And Ellen is joining in, as a matter of fact, from Neosho. Ellen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and guest. I have some oat straw that I would like to use as a mulch over a new seed bed, but I understand that oat straw has some allelopathic properties. So is it not a good thing to use as a mulch over a seed bed? And Larry, I'd also be interested to know whether you put seeds into your straw bales or do you also always use starts?
Okay, so oat straw, I'm not sure its impact on grass. I'm going to just be honest. I don't know if time with any of our, you know.
I'm scratching my head because I haven't heard that.
Or I haven't either.
Or if I did hear it, I've forgotten it.
So I would, Ellen, I would just maybe want to do, I don't know if... our professors in turf will answer questions like this. And you may want to just see what certain plants have certain response, like grass is not affected by juglone, black walnut toxicity. Grass will grow under a black walnut, but other plants won't. So I'm not sure, and I'm concerned if it is. I'd hate to tell you, yes, I'm not sure. So I would do a little search on university. I always do advanced searches, you know, oat straw as mulch for lawn seed, and then put .edu as your extension in the search, advanced search, and see what you can come up from university sources. I'm sorry, Ellen, I don't know. I'm going to tell you, I've planted seeds in my straw bale, but Larry is the king of straw bale gardening, so I'm going to defer to him. I just want to brag that I actually did it and had success. So, but I added compost in the middle for my seeding.
Yeah, you need to put some a bit of soil or compost in there if you're going to plant seeds, and I typically just do not do that. I'd rather put my tomato plants and stuff and whatever I'm going to put into those straw bales as the plants already there.
Well, and that's a lot easier. I only did it because I was trying new and different things, and you are the king of straw bale. I always tell when people I've done it, I'm a container. I like doing containers. It's just the way I garden and finding the right method. And I'm always like, well, listen to Larry because he's the king. He does this all the time.
Well, I just have had really good success with it that way. And so why? I'm one of these. If it's working, I'm just going to keep doing it.
And
way.
I think it's a lot easier, too, because you have to add some soil and planting mix or compost to start your seeds. And you're right. You can... You know, you've got a great raised bed container. You've created some compost, and those transplants will do much better. It'll be easier.
Yeah, there you go, Ellen. Thank you for calling. Well, Ann in Duluth, Minnesota, we will turn to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I planted native plants in my yard about 12 years ago, and we were told to put down newspaper and then mulch, and we did all that, and it's been fine, and they've done well. But grass is coming up in there, really a lot of grass. Some of them seem to have seed heads. I don't know what kind of grass that is. And then others, I think that's just regular lawn grass. But it's really prolific, and I don't know how to get it out of there. And I just, it's like pulling weeds, but worse.
And the grass this year, go ahead, Larry.
Go ahead. That's fine. I was just shaking my head thinking about what probably the seed bed preparation was an issue, wouldn't you think, Melinda?
And the fact it's, and I think, I'll tell you, this year I have grass growing that looks better than the area. Well, we don't have a really good lawn, but there are areas I'm like, this looks better than the part we call our lawn, because I'm out in the country, and we have just, you know, more than it's just keep our feet from getting muddy kind of thing. But I have grass like you that I cannot believe where it's come, and it's infiltrated all of my garden beds. Some of it pulls really easy, and some of that's what I've cut back until I can get out and dig it out, because I just am trying to get it out of the garden so it doesn't reseed. And part of it might be infiltration from the surrounding area. Edging is really very valuable. I lived in the city, so I had mostly gardens, and I had sidewalk. And, you know, I didn't have to do a whole lot of edging to keep that surrounding grass out, because I didn't have much surrounding my property. But I now do edging several times a year just to kind of slow the infiltration. So might want to edge that bed. You say native plants as opposed to a prairie garden, so I'm guessing you're not burning. That's one of the reasons things are burned and mowing. But I think you're going to have to get in there and do some pulling and digging or spot treating. If it's quack grass, I think I've read somewhere those roots can go 5 feet or more, you know.
You're not going to get rid of quack grass that
exactly.
way.
And so, you know, trying to either put a milk jug, cut the bottom out over the quack grass and spray, let it dry, move it to the next one to protect your good plants, or paint it on, but making sure it does that product, whether it's Finale, Roundup, if you don't mind using a total vegetation killer that kills the tops and the roots. I don't know what else you can do, and I think just edging to try to, and then maybe creating a mulch area between the surrounding grass or lawn or whatever's around that native planting, just to slow the infiltration in the future.
Yeah, there you go, Ann. Thank you for calling. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Russ in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Russ. Thanks for calling.
Back in 1980, when we had our first house and our first garden, which was not fenced in, we had a neighbor that had been gardening for years and years, and he said, what you do is before you plant your carrot seeds, your lettuce, you sprinkle helter-skelter bags of, once you know where your rows are going to be, you sprinkle bags of radish seeds. He said you give them a couple of, you know, until they sprout out, which would be maybe 4 or 5 days. He said, and then you make your furrow right through there. He said you plant your seeds that you want. He said, but the whole idea is that rabbits, moles, and voles do not like the smell or taste of radish plants. You know, they're going to be just skinny sprouts. You could pull them out and eat them in salad, but they're not going to turn into radishes. But yet the animals don't like the taste or smell of them. And it's a completely organic protector.
You know, and what I always say to people, if it's environmentally safe for you and the plants, always worth a try. And whether you buy a product as a repellent or you use a strategy like this, monitor. You know, a lot of people have used cayenne peppers for repelling deer and rabbits. And I had a student one time when I was teaching tell me, he goes, we found the deer preferred the treated plants over the untreated. So I'm going to have to give, I haven't heard that, Russ, but thank you for sharing. You know, it's worth a try. And you're right, radish greens are excellent. And so worst case scenario, you get an extra harvest out of that row. So I think that's kind of exciting. Give it a try and then monitor as well. And if you decide to use a repellent, a more of a commercial repellent, always check to make sure that it's labeled for use on edible plants. Something like a plant skid, SKYDD, is something that's organic and it's rain resistant and you can use it. You know, you always want to check the label of any product you use. But people will have to give this a try and let us know, right, Larry, if they also have the same success.
Sounds like a great idea. I've never heard it before, but why not give it a little try and see what happens? Thank you, Russ. Appreciate it. Well, Nancy in Little Chute, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm having some issues with lamb's ear, and it's in my grass, and I'd like to know how I can keep it under control or get some grass to grow.
So you want to get rid of the lamb's ear where you want your grass to grow. Am I understanding that right?
Yes.
Okay, so this is, again, where one step is to edge the planting to slow down the infiltration of that lamb's ear into the grass. The non-chemical option is to dig it up. There are organic weed and grass killers. They kill anything green they touch, or gray in this case of lamb's ear, but you need to do repeat application because they only burn the top off. So by edging that garden bed, that's going to slow it from infiltrating in the grass. Removing the flowers, and most people prefer not to see the flowers. They're beautiful, but they kind of make the plant look a little unkempt. So if you like that informal look, that's great, but then cut those flowers off as they fade so you don't get any seedlings. And then prevent it from spreading underground by rhizomes by edging that garden bed. And then either dig up the plants that are where you don't want them, or then decide, you know, is this something you're going to either do an organic treatment several times or a total vegetation killer?
Yep, those are the options for sure. Nancy, good luck. Thank you. Gary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hello. I have a question about the garden, actually. And we put something in our garden a while back that it must have been full of weeds. And, you know, we've been overrun in this one section of weeds, these tall, long weeds. And so we're wondering, you know, I was thinking I have to dig up the entire garden to get rid of this, or is there something I can put on it, but then will anything grow there anymore?
Yeah, so this is a great, quickly kind of go through options with weeding. So, if you prefer not to use chemicals, digging up weeds is one option. Let's talk quackgrass. We were mentioning before, and Larry's like, oh, terrible weed, and it is. And one way to manage weeds is you can cultivate a garden twice a month for 2 years, twice a month throughout the growing season for 2 years, and that's one way to eventually really get quackgrass and some of those aggressive perennial weeds under control. But that's 2 years you're not gardening, and twice a month you're tilling the soil. So it's a lot of work, and most of us don't want to wait 2 years to have to start our garden. Solarizing is another option, spreading clear plastic, and it sounds like we're out of time. And then pulling, and then weed killers, like read the label. There are some you can plant in less than a week after you treat. So always read and follow label directions of any product you use.
Absolutely good information there. Thank you for calling, Gary. Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host, author, and columnist. And her website, melindamyers.com. Be sure to take a look at that as well. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert. Her website, melindamyers.com. So, questions for her. I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. And, Melinda, before I forget about it, you have some live events on tap here. In fact, you're at State Fair Park right now. What's going on?
You bet. NARI Home Improvement Show. And for those folks who know NARI, it's usually a February event, and obviously not this February. So it's the spring NARI Home Improvement Show. And the good news is there'll be no snowstorm, which it always seemed to happen. And so mask required. We're doing safety. But I'm talking containers today at 2. Tomorrow, gardentainment, so creating a nice entertaining space. You know, a lot of us are spending more time at home, so things you can grow for your family to enjoy, and as things are opening up and maybe smaller gatherings, create that space. And then Sunday, weekend makeovers, so some of those things you can do quickly to have big impact on your landscape and your garden. You know, I think we all have big plans and we get overwhelmed and so we do nothing. And so these are some simple things that can make a big difference. And I think for me, it helps me get my momentum going. Okay, I took care of that. That's looking good. Now I can take the next thing on the list. And then I continue to have webinars as well. And I want to thank all my sponsors. I've got Kids Gardening coming up June 1st. So if you either are a youth garden leader or you've got kids, grandkids, or nieces and nephews, we'll talk about things you can do with children and the whole family. And then I'm going to do a container workshop, much more detailed webinar on the 3rd. And so check my website. It's a great place to see what's happening. And as things open up, it's fun. The webinars are great. We have this wonderful learning community, but boy, there's nothing like seeing people in person
yeah.
and talking gardening. So hopefully folks will join me. And then I just want to also mention American Transmission Company and GrowSmart have teamed up with several libraries, Milwaukee County, Waukesha, Dane, Jefferson, Brown, and Dickinson. And we've got GrowSmart seeds, pollinator seeds, and pollinator guides. So check your library first to make sure there's still some available and they're not all gone. But try to get some seeds out to folks so that they can start doing some planting to help support pollinators. So do our part to help them as well.
Oh, lots of good stuff there. Well, we have lots of callers on line, Melinda. So let's go back to the phone. Stu in Beaver Dam will give you a chance. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Larry. Melinda, it's good to hear from you.
Hi.
Say, I'm an old farm boy. I ride around my tractor and listen to you. And I'm getting ready to start to slow down here. I want to put in a runway to fly an ultralight off of. And I've been researching grass, and I was going to use ryegrass and Kentucky fescue. I wonder what you guys thought of that.
One of the things with ryegrass and doing like a perennial, I'm guessing like a perennial ryegrass in a grass seed mix, not as long lived as some, but it's a good starter grass. And there's a lot more now, the ones that are in the grass seed mixes. So Kentucky bluegrass is excellent for full sun. A few fescues in there, just add some shade tolerance, but I'm guessing it's going to be a full sun area if you're landing things on it. No trees in the way. And so the rye is going to give you, like a perennial rye will give you some quick start. So it'll help hold the soil, help keep the weeds a little bit at bay. And I think that's a good mix. Larry, you always have some great insight.
No, I think it's obviously, as you say, it's going to be not shady at all there. And so I think that's a good, I think that's a good recommendation. Stu, good luck with that. And good luck with your retirement.
Yeah, how fun.
Appreciate it. Donna in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Donna.
Yes, good afternoon. I just wanted to remind those who are planting things like trees and shrubs where they're digging down deep to remember to call Digger's Hotline before you dig.
Oh, Donna, thank you. Shame on me for not mentioning it. Great advice.
And they're so fast, usually. I mean, you need to give them a couple of days maybe notice, but they're right out there. I've had them on my property, and it's sometimes a surprise where
you're here already. And
they're here already, or it's also a surprise when you say, oh, there's something under the ground right there.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump on board, Donna. Call 811 or file online. And they had a 25% increase in calls last year. So that's great. That means people took your advice, Donna, and they called first. And not only trees and shrubs, but even if you're starting a flower bed, because sometimes those utilities, soil settles. And not only is it a safety issue and an inconvenience if you hit a utility, but you're financially responsible if you didn't have them come and mark 3 business days in advance. Call 811 or file online. They're saying if you can file online, it's even faster because of the volume they're handling. But, Donna, thank you so much for mentioning that.
Yeah, thank you very much. Ken in Porterfield, we'll go to you now. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay, so last couple of years, my garden has been organic, no man-made chemicals added to it. So, but then I've had problems with my tomato plants. They're not producing like they were previously. I didn't use very many man-made chemicals on it or nothing. So, like I said, last couple of years been organic. So, I had the ground tested. They told me to add pine needles to my garden, and I've never heard that before. I just want your insight on it.
Who did your? Can I ask who did the soil testing?
Marinette Farm and Garden.
You know, I might suggest, I don't know them, and pine needles, they may be looking at pH, but pine needles have a minimal impact on the pH, and it takes them a long time to break down. And so I'm a little skeptical. You're right, Ken. I'm kind of with you that I'm a little skeptical on this. I would recommend going to the University Extension Soil Testing Lab, and you can find out from your county extension or go online, and it'll tell you how to take the test, which you probably know because you've done it. And then they'll give you the address. And it, depending on the pressure on the lab, how many samples, it's usually a couple of weeks. But and then tell them, you know, you're looking for organic options. So they give you and what you're growing. And I don't think the pine needles are going to make a difference for you because it's not going to change the pH significantly. And it's not going to add what you need. And they're slow to break down. They're great mulch on the soil surface. So I would get your soil tested through the University Extension Soil Testing Lab because they're going to give you the information. You know, their equipment's calibrated. You know, they're certified, so you know that their information, and it's research-based. And just tell them you're looking organic, and that should help.
Yeah, and okay, mention tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mention the plants that you're putting in as well, as Melinda suggested, for sure. Good luck. Thank you, Ken. Tom in Wanakee, your turn.
Good afternoon. Say, I have 5 Arona erecta chokeberry. They're the red chokeberry.
Aronia? Okay.
Yeah, Aronia. And I missed cutting them back before they budded, and so they budded in March already. And I'm wondering, four of them are about 5-6 feet tall already, and I wanted to cut back in order to prune and lower about 20-21 inches above the ground to promote more growth from the bottom. Can I do it now, or should I wait till winter?
Okay, so with chokeberries, they flower in the spring. They set their flower buds. So a lot of times we do our major pruning in late winter, early spring, because it's easier for us to see the structure. You would impact flowering. What you may want to do with your chokeberries, most chokeberries sucker, and so you could take a few of the bigger, fatter stems, and you could do this now. Wait, you know, we're having, you know, wait till we've got some extended dry weather. Depending on where you are, some thunderstorms may be in the forecast, but take some of those older stems back to the ground level. Then you can reduce the height, and that by pruning some back to the ground level, you're going to promote growth at the base. And then next year, do the same thing and the same thing. So over a three-year period, you're going to be really encouraging almost all brand new growth that will have leaves from the bottom to the top. Now, with the chokeberry, you know, if, depending on how you prune, you're going to be eliminating the fruit. So depending on if you're just growing them for the foliage and the flowers, that's not a problem. If you're trying to preserve the fruit, again, removing a few stems here and there and not reducing the height, and then next year removing a few more stems. And again, you're going to gradually reduce the height because you're getting rid of the big, taller branches, and you'll still have some fruit. But if you don't care about the fruit, then you can reduce the height as well. So hopefully, you know, back to an outward-facing bud or a healthy bud that faces outward, but right now they're all leaves. So an outward-facing healthy leaf or stem, shorter stem, is where you want to make your cut. But you will be eliminating the fruit, obviously, that would have formed on that stem.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Margie in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi.
Hi, I have a question about a peony. It wilted terribly, and a friend said it was verticillium wilt fungus. I'm not sure if I am pronouncing that correctly. And said, pull it out and get rid of it. Don't let anything touch it. So I pulled it out, put it in a bag, and it went to the to our recycling center. The question is, can I plant anything else there? It was a lovely little white peony. I'd had it for about 4 years. Is that soil contaminated, or what do I need to do?
So verticillium wilt is a soil fungus, and sometimes it comes in with topsoil, sometimes it comes in on a plant. And so if, in fact, it was verticillium wilt, that is in the soil, and you'll need to look for something that's resistant. And if you do an internet search, you'll find a small list of plants that are verticillium wilt resistant. Are your other plants, Margie, in the area looking okay that were near the peony?
Absolutely wonderfully. The irises and the daylilies, everything else that were near it are just fine.
I'm wondering, you know, in the future, what you may want to do, and I'm sorry, it's too late for your peony, but in the future, sending something like that to Brian Huddleston, the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, they can test for verticillium wilt and look for those symptoms to identify, yes, that is the problem, so that you know what you're dealing with. You might want to leave what, and maybe it was some other kind of fungal disease or root rot. Vole damage was pretty bad this winter, and they could have been munching. I don't know, you would have noticed it, munching on the rhizome that could have caused problems. So it might have been something other than verticillium wilt, which would be good because verticillium wilt's in the soil and it really limits your options. So I'm guessing it might not be because your other plants aren't affected. And so you may want to pop an annual in there for this year, see how it does before you put a permanent plant in there in case it is a root rot fungus that other plants are susceptible to, giving that soil a break for a few years so that the disease somewhat, Brian's probably shuddering if he hears hearing me describe this, but, you know, the population gets less because there's no food for it to feed on. But I'm just worried if you spend money on, you know, we don't know what killed it, you put something else in that's susceptible, it may be throwing your money away. So you know, giving it a season rest if you can, adding compost because it is an amazing product that fixes your soil. And then you might just want to do an annual, so if you lose it, you're not out as much money as putting in a perennial.
Yeah, good advice. Thank you, Margie, for calling. John emailed to ask how you edge your beds. Do you use a barrier?
You know, great. You know, I don't use a barrier. I just have found those. I hate the plastic ones. So apologize to all of you that love them. But I find they pop up, and I ripped them out when I bought my house. What I do, when I had my small city lot, I just used a shovel, dug a V trench, and filled it with wood chips. And that was my mowing strip, too. So my mower tire and my little bit of grass I had. Now I have larger garden beds, so I rent a edger from, you know, like a home building place. And I'll edge it. I'll use an edger, and then it does cut that trench. And then when I'm mulching, I fill that trench with that mulch, and then that just kind of slows the infiltration. You know, when I worked for the city, we used steel edging on some of our permanent beds, but that's pretty pricey. And you know, installing it. Some people use those cement curbing products, you know, where they come and actually pour like that edge. But to me, that limits my expansion options. So I always want to make my garden bigger. And some people use pavers, but I would still make sure you can mow right around the edge, too. But I find just a physical cutting the weeds and the grass regularly helps. For me, I prefer just to fill that trench with mulch just because I like the look of that. And I don't know if you have any edging materials that you like, Larry.
No, I think that's a great advice. I like that as well. And the edger, you know, those are so much easier.
And, you know, get your neighbors to join in. So when I was in the city, there were three of us, and I was like, I need to edge these beds, and I don't have the time to do it with a shovel. And three of us rented an edger, and then we just took it to everybody's house, and we shared the cost and the transportation. And you're right, it's much easier.
Much easier. Okay.
Thanks for the question, though.
Yeah, for sure. Scott in Windsor, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and it's really great to speak with you, Melissa.
Well, thank you. You too.
I have a question about transplanting peonies.
Okay.
I have some that have ended up beneath a row of pines that we planted for a cover or a view screen along our backyard. And I'd like to transplant them, but I think it was something that Larry said a few years ago, that they can be very tricky, that you need to make sure that they're planted, replanted to the same depth. Is there anything that tricky about transplanting peonies?
Well, Larry's right. So here's a couple things. So we typically transplant peonies in the fall. However, I was helping a friend move, and we were digging her peonies because it was take them now or not at all. You want to try to keep the eye, the point of growth, at about 2 inches below the soil surface. If we plant our peonies too deep, sometimes they won't bloom for you. But let me tell you, this peony that didn't listen. I had a gentleman call. He was going to build a raised bed. He didn't want his peonies anymore. He was adding 18 inches of soil. And he said, do I need to dig them out? And I'm like, well, you may get leaves the first year, but you know, eventually they'll give up. You won't have flowers. Just cut the leaves off as they come. He called me the next year and he said, not only do I have leaves, I have flowers. And they were 18 inches too deep. Those peonies did not read the book. So if you're digging them, do try to kind of be aware of where that stem is coming off, that fleshy growth, the rhizome, and then just keep it about 2 inches below the soil surface. Full sun, good drainage. That's probably why you're moving them, because too much shade. And they may not bloom the year following transplant, but they're just putting their energy into their roots. So it doesn't mean you've done anything wrong, but the next year they will likely bloom for you.
18 inches.
I know. And I don't think he had any reason to call and lie to me. So it's just a reminder that, you know, when you push the limits, you take a chance, and sometimes you're lucky.
Jim in Appleton, let's go to you. Hi, Jim.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. We have about three Honeycrisp apple trees. They're about 6 or 7 years old. And one of them is blooming, but the other two don't bloom. And it's been consistently that way for the last couple of years. How and I'm just wondering. They're... Go ahead.
So, I was going to say, how old are they?
I'm guessing they're about 6 or 7 years old because we planted them about 4 years ago, and they had a couple of years growth at the garden center.
Okay. Have you done much pruning on them? I'm guessing you've probably treated them all the same.
Yeah, I pruned them this last winter, and the one is just full of beautiful blooms. The other two, which are about 15 feet apart from each other, they are not. The one has a few blooms, and the other one has nothing.
So, and I'm guessing you bought them all at the same time, and hopefully they will. A lot of our apple trees are grafted to be dwarf, semi-dwarf, or standard size on their own rootstock, and dwarf apple trees tend to fruit earlier. So I don't know if there was a difference in the rootstock used on those. That might influence it. Plants sometimes respond differently. You know, by 6 or 7 years old, and it's interesting that you've got one that's a little more anxious to flower than the other two. But hopefully in the next year or two, the others will catch up. Avoid high nitrogen fertilizers, because you don't want to encourage a lot of leaf stem growth. You're already getting that, it sounds like. Have your soil tested if you haven't. Our soils tend to be high to excessive in phosphorus and potassium, but it's often not available to the plant. And one reason organics, and malorganite is not an organic, but they've done research and found when malorganite is applied to the soil, when the microorganisms work on releasing those nutrients from the pellets, it also releases some of the phosphorus and potassium bound to the soil, making it available to the plants. Phosphorus is good for flowering and fruiting and root development, potassium disease resistance and hardiness. And so a soil test will tell you, I do work with malorganite, so I just want to disclose that. And it is labeled for use on edibles. You have to, we garden, so we choose what we put on our plants. But, you know, that's one of the things that I found to be very helpful for some of those plants that are a little stubborn for blooming is we've got phosphorus in the soil. It's just not available to the plant. Adding more just adds more to the soil sometimes, and it's not readily available. But a soil test will tell you if that's the issue. And it sounds like it's probably just different rate of growth or maturity in the plants versus anything. You know, if you've treated them the same, you bought them from the same place, it's and the conditions are the same, it sounds like it's just a difference in the plants. Nothing you can do to fix that other than wait, unfortunately.
Wait a little while, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we are wrapping it up today. Melinda, it's always a pleasure. I hope you have some fun this weekend at State Fair Park. And we'll look forward to another visit from you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Melinda Myers, our guest. Take a look at her website, melindamyers.com. It's just full of great, great information. And we have a blog on getting busy in your garden as well. It includes ideas for cool weather plants, compact shrubs, and other information. Just go to WPR.org/Larry for a look at that blog note. And thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.